Imagine that for over a decade, you have fought to reach the pinnacle of your profession. Then you walk away. When you return 6 months later, nothing is the same.
I've been screwed by Shawn Michaels. I've been screwed by Stone Cold Steve Austin.
You scratch my back and I'll stab yours.
There is no respect.
Everybody in that dressing room knows that I'm the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
Even your fans have changed. At the heart of this change is a man that spits in the face of your every accomplishment.
Ever since you came back, you ain't done nothing but cry.
He has attacked you physically and verbally.
If you put the letter S in front of Hitman, you've had my exact opinion of Bret Hart.
This man mocks your legacy.
Bret Hart on his best day. Can't lace my boots. I will beat the hell out of Bret. And that's the bottom line.
Injustice after injustice has forced you to snap.
Frustrated isn't the word for it.
Now the finger is pointed at you. You're the one who's changed.
He snapped, McMahon!
They say your ego is your enemy. There is only one solution. You must make Austin beg for mercy. But what if Stone Cold Steve Austin wins? What becomes of Bret Hitman Hart then?
From Belfast, Northern Ireland, you're listening to the Four Sweet Horsemen Podcast with Richard Drew, Andrew Moore, Chris Curlett, and Stephen Curry.
Sweet Horseman Podcast. My name is Richard.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Curry.
I'm Chris.
And today we are talking about a very special match in terms of WrestleMania history. And actually, I would say in terms of turning the tide of the state of the landscape of professional wrestling. And it's Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13. Now, anyone any preliminary thoughts on this all?
Well, it was interesting the build up of it because this time last year, Bret Hart was in the main event of WrestleMania against Shawn Michaels in the Iron Man match.
Right.
So, spoiler alert, Bret lost.
I don't think that's a spoiler.
Just saying.
Let me see someone will be listening to going, for fuck's sake!
I was
going to
watch
it! Spoiling the bastard!
Too soon. So, politically behind the scenes, as that happened, Bret took about nearly a year off from WWF. He went off to make a really shit Western TV show.
Is that what he was doing?
Yes.
What? I've never seen it.
Tell me more, Andrew. Right.
I can't remember.
Did 15 minutes.
Did he wear his shit shades?
This doesn't look realistic.
I think he might have, you know. I can't remember the name off the top of my head of the
I'm
TV
on
show.
It. Google it.
While I'm procrastinating, Chris is now Googling it. The whole thing, he was kind of trying to edge his way out of WWF at the time, ironically, because obviously later that year, it's 1997, so later that year, obviously he was going to fuck off,
to do
some sort of screw job. Don't know if he's heard of it.
Sounds a bit familiar. Like,
don't spoil that for me.
Okay, well, we're covering it.
For fucking sake, you mean he's left?
I thought he was just down in developmental fucking about.
I've got some bad news about his health then, if you're wondering. So, yeah, obviously Shawn Michaels was a bit of a cunt back in the day, so after he won the title belt, him and his clique mates, Diesel, Razor Ramon, and I think
Chris is pissing himself.
Have you found the picture?
What the Western was called?
That's it.
The Lonesome Dove.
Lonesome Dove. I remember that.
I don't think that's what it was called.
He was also in the Adventures.
What was his name?
Luther Root.
Fuck's sake, Bret Hart, you big fucking root.
Yeah.
Luther Root.
Fuck, he did 7 episodes.
His signature move was a sharp rooter at that point.
Sharp rooter.
So he went off the whole TV thing. It didn't quite work out. He came back, and the whole idea was they were taking a year off, and then him and Shawn would have a big rematch at WrestleMania 13. Shawn then lost his smile, I believe. I don't know where he put it, but he had to retire.
Sonny.
That's fucking grim.
Especially these days. Yeah. Ooh. Oh, ooh. Jesus, awful.
Eating a body pack kebab.
Oh, Jesus.
And the rematch couldn't happen. Brett was a wee bit pissed, so as a bargaining chip, Vince paired him with this young upstart known as Stone Cold Steve Austin, who only a couple of months prior had done the whole Austin 316 thing.
Before that, he was kind of, I remember, I was watching, this is when I was watching WWF at the time, and I remember when Steve Austin came in and
the ringmaster,
and I wasn't sold on him as a character. I didn't like him. It's something I just didn't like about him, and I remember not being sold on him at all until I watched this match back in the day.
Yeah.
And this match, I went,
this is the turning point.
Fuck. Like, did you this see guy him, is serious.
But did you see him in ECW before that? He was actually quite good on the mic.
I didn't see him, but I wasn't watching ECW then.
I feel like history is really kind this time in ECW. He like had one match and he lost, and he was because he was doing the whole injury thing. He had good promos, yes, but I feel like the way any documentary portrays his time in ECW is if that was the groundwork for the whole Stone Cold thing. It was to an extent, but
getting a bit of ahead of themselves because he went over to be the ringmaster, and it was kind of a lull. It was
a real bad lull. But even when he became Stone Cold, he still was in a bit of a lull until the King of the Ring that year.
When was his WCW?
That was early 90s. Stunning Steve Austin.
Yeah. I was watching a bit of that last night.
He wrestled Dustin Rhodes.
He was sort of geared for a big push at that stage because, like, he had wrestled Ricky Steamboat in WCW, and he was in the.
He was well regarded in WCW.
Paul Heyman was his manager.
But at any time,
the Dangerous Alliance with Rick Rude and Brian Pillman.
Yes,
and I think Sherry might have also been in.
Yeah, I think she was involved.
Because there's an amazing War Games match that's worth going back and watching that me and Corey watched a couple of times.
We did.
Brett came back. He was a wee bit pissed that Shawn Michaels wasn't prepared to drop the belt back to him in kind of the return match at WrestleMania 13. So
Brett, let's be honest, Brett was a wanker. I think, remember back in the day when I was sort of making hints towards it earlier, when I sort of said this, I wasn't sold on Steve Austin, but this match changed my opinion of him, but also changed my opinion of Bret Hart.
Well,
and that's made me realise, when I was a kid, it made me realise that guy's a fucking cunt.
I remember him being Bret Hart. You looked at him and went, he's the nicest,
he's the ultimate hero.
I loved him. And I look back and go, I would not invite him out for a pint. He's an ignorant prick.
No,
he was. Spit at you and go, there's too much head on that.
He's
a fucking door. Or if he asked for a glass of wine, fill it up at the top. Deep cunt, like.
But he's a fucking crack factory. I know life hasn't been good to him.
He's a fucking mood hoover. He sucks. He sucks all the crack.
Dementor, he's the fucking dementor. He's a crack factory.
No, but yeah, when you look back now, you're going, he's not.
Did you read his book?
I haven't even read fucking Chris's book that he lent me about Mick Foley.
Chris sent me down O'Brien's book about a year and a half ago. I still haven't read it yet.
Yeah, so. Are you like a fucking wrestling library to us boys?
It's the only books I read.
Well, at least you read books. I can't even read a fucking comic book about Mick Foley.
When I say read, I just hold the book up to my face.
escape life.
And then I would count 5 minutes and turn the page.
So tell your children, daddy's reading. Leave me alone when you go, my old darkness, my old friend.
I actually have my phone in between the pages.
But yeah, no. But in his book, and also in a really, really good, if you go on the WWE Network and you watch, there's a really good sit down with Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, where Jim Ross is interviewing the pair of them about their rivalry and how much they hated each other and how their lives have changed since the 1997 period when it was at its worst.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time you're just watching it go, and every other thing that came out of Brower's wife was, oh yeah, it just seemed like a good opportunity to make money. You're like, really, Brett? Really? So Sean just kept talking about the art of it. Bret Hart just kept talking about the money, and fair enough, you have to make money in the industry.
I mean, you're fucking Bret Hart, he's already getting paid.
He was the top man in the company at that stage.
Yeah, he wasn't fucking sure of a bob or two,
doesn't explain his haircut though.
No, he's a wanker. That's a wanker's haircut.
Yeah, even the British Bulldog decided I could chop this shit off, and then Brett was just rocking fucking.
I think British Bulldog cut his hair off after sniffing bath salts one night. I don't think it was by choice.
British bath salts, that's what it's doing.
Shocking.
So yeah, no, so a bit of background then. Come Survivor Series 1996. Bret Hart returned, and him and Stone Cold Steve Austin had
a bit
of a rivalry. Really, really good match, actually. Yeah. It was not quite as good as the Mania one we're about to talk about, but it kind of laid the groundwork. But then it was still meant to be Shawn and Bret at Mania that year.
Yeah.
I think one of them was meant to win, I think Bret was meant to win the Royal Rumble and then go on. Shawn got injured. I think he bust his knee, which a lot of people are suggesting that he kind of faked it because he didn't want to drop the belt to Bret.
So I wouldn't put it past him.
I wouldn't put it past Shawn Michaels back in the 90s, to be fair.
Yeah.
So then I believe he lost it to Sid at Royal Rumble.
Yes. Psycho Sid.
Yeah. Psycho Sid. Of course, then he went on to fight The Undertaker, and The Undertaker took the belt at Mania in 13. So left Bret Hart in a position where he had to fight Stone Cold Steve Austin
which
again.
He probably wasn't happy about.
Well, I think
victim of circumstance.
Really. It was a win for the fans though, because the matches that came out of it were amazing. Because you got two of the best, despite how much of a crack vacuum Bret Hart was, he's still one of the best of all time as a wrestler.
He's technically proficient and is very good at entertaining.
Absolutely. Without spoiling the actual match that we're going to talk about, I think that it was a different Bret that I'd seen in this.
Definitely, yeah.
In terms of the style. And it showed that he wasn't just the showboat sort of technical wrestler. He could sort of grind it up a bit.
He could brawl it out.
Yeah, he could brawl it out, which was interesting.
Totally. And obviously, a year from now, Stone Cold Steve Austin will win the WWF title for the first time at WrestleMania 14.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, damn it.
What's the point even going back through the fucking network? I'm going to fucking cancel my subscription. You're spoiling everything.
Curry, you're telling me you have nuts in your mouth.
Shut the fuck up. All right, I'm eating wasabi nuts. Give me a fucking break. Not the first green fucking nuts I've had in my fucking shop. They're really good though. Wasabi. They're Ricky Steamboat nuts.
Ricky Steamboat's nuts.
Leave me alone. Karate nuts. Pricks.
So in the background then, Stone Cold actually won the Royal Rumble in 1997. It was meant to fight for the title at Mania 13. However, Bret Hart claimed shenanigans and said claimed Stone Cold cheated. I can't remember actually how it ended, but then the number one contender spot for Mania was stripped from Stone Cold, and that's what led to the blood feud, which we now get at WrestleMania 13.
Bret's such a wee bitch. Like,
he is a wee bitch.
Bitches about everything.
Yeah.
Bret the bitch man Hart. Like, fuck up. He cheated. I'm telling you. I told Vince.
I feel like
fuck off, Bret.
There was something quite poetic about the screw job then, just in context.
Yeah.
Of that. It's like, yeah, well,
you got your comeuppance, dickbag.
The cuntiest there was, the cuntiest there is, and the cuntiest
there ever will
be.
It's a great t-shirt. And it's a picture of his shite glasses just sitting there stomped into the ground with a beer tin beside it.
Sure, he's even still bitching on Twitter these days. Remember when Seth Rollins hurt Sting?
Oh, yeah.
Bret Hart was all on
Twitter.
It's like, oh, Seth isn't safe, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, how the fuck do you know? What have you wrestled, Seth? You decrepit fart.
What do you know about safe wrestling? Oh, yeah, Goldberg. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What do you know about safe wrestling? Oh, yeah, the bottom of Goldberg boot.
Boot. Mental.
I don't want to say it, but sorry, you're right.
I'm very much a proponent of karma, you know. If you're going to act like an arsehole,
I honestly thought you were going to say Kamala there.
Kamala.
That's
the
most racist thing. And I go back through, it's like, oh wow, how did that shit ever float? Like, you go eat the head off chickens and all sorts.
It is WWF.
That's
going to
be my Halloween costume this
Kamala
year.
You have a lot of weight to put on, fuck's sake.
Thank you very much.
Wasn't meant to be a compliment. Yeah, yeah.
Fucking face today. This is great.
So right, should we get into the match itself then?
Yeah, you did such a great job painting the picture.
Did anyone cringe at the fucking promo package video? That guy.
I didn't watch the promo package.
Yeah.
Can we get the audio added to the end of this episode?
That's Montour Troops' job then.
I swear to God.
Is it that
you know what? I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I did watch it, but I didn't think
because
it was.
Because Vince will send me a cease and desist.
Brett
will send me a
cease and desist. It's just your man makes it so dramatic.
I watched it and I didn't think anything of it, but I like WCW themed matches.
You manage to watch 5 hours of wrestling a day, but without actually watching it.
just like Chris reads, you know, 15 hours of books and doesn't actually take anything in, fuck's sake.
It goes along the lines of, imagine for over a decade you reach the pinnacle of your
career.
Actually,
I do remember this.
It was so
and it's like, and you thought it couldn't get any worse.
Then you leave. 6 months later, you come back, and it's not the same.
like,
I swear to God.
Actually, in my notes, I did write the pay-per-view starts with the PlayStation blimp. I thought it was like, wow, a good throwback to the blimp in the video. Then it says, great video intro, pure VHS shite.
It reminded me, if you ever watched Judge Judy and the they explain what the crime is.
Imagine
he was a straight shooting sharpshooter.
He's a straight
was a Texas rattlesnake.
Yes, that's exactly it. Like,
no, you have, if you're gonna watch a match, watch a video. It's
promo.
So
it is
fucking.
It's so shite. It's good. It is good.
And then the amount of
that.
Beeps in it as well when.
Oh yeah, they didn't like swearing back
until fucking Brett comes along and he's giving people in the crowd.
Well, here,
fingers,
yeah, dropping the
F
bombs and stuff. Yeah.
I have to say, actually,
Brett Hart didn't give a shit.
Sort of getting on to the match. I totally forgot that Ken Shamrock was a special guest referee.
Really?
Does anyone know why? Why he was?
I still
want
to handle because, and don't forget, he's from UFC.
No,
he knew submissions.
He wasn't. He had just joined WWF at this point. I think this is actually maybe one of his first appearances.
Yeah, and to be
wrestled.
To be honest,
he's still
a
UFC guy that knew about.
No, at the time that was the equivalent of like Ronda Rousey coming in.
Yeah,
to the
he was a big star.
He was hard as fuck.
Because
yeah.
Dan Severn had already been there from UFC and MMA at the time. I don't know if UFC.
No, Severn didn't come
into
that until 98.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought Severn was before that.
But when Shamrock came in, it made people sort of sit up in those. Because at the time, UFC wasn't the force it is now.
Yeah, yeah.
But then people were noticing it. And whenever people knew who Ken Shamrock were, who were into combat sports.
Yeah, true.
And then when they heard Ken Shamrock was out.
It would have been either Shamrock or Hoyce Gracie. And Hoyce Gracie was going nowhere near fucking WWF.
I totally forgot how fucking... Ken Shamrock,
he's a beast.
He fucking well roided up in this.
Man,
he's more roids coursing through his veins than fucking Brett and Stone Cold put together.
I met him just going like, because it's fucking ref gear. Everybody else, you know, I'll cut the sleeves off my ref gear. So he turns open a pair of fucking Lycra cycling shorts, a Lycra ref top. He looks like a licorice all sorts that's been fucking dropped into fucking Red Bull. He's
our trumpet, he plays football.
Yeah, he plays football.
He wore something like
there he is on the monitor there.
He's a fucking huge cunt. Like,
he
looks like Beetlejuice that's just tanked about fucking 10 monster energies.
I actually thought that because it's all skin tight fucking ref gear, I did think he did look a bit like Beetlejuice, but it's like it looks like he's geared up as Beetlejuice ready for a bout of BDSM.
Oh, right.
It just looks
Beetlejuice on gas.
It just looks fucking dodgy as shit.
Fuck.
And I was just like, wait, what are you wearing, you silly bastard?
He was an ugly fucker though, wasn't he?
He was.
If you've been punching the nose many times that poor cunt, you wouldn't look so great.
I admit, but you know, like,
could come back on the guy, you know, mate. I've took a few digs, this beard protects everything.
No, but like, he was a weird bastard as well. Like now, like a year later or 2 years later, whenever he sort of dated his sister.
What? Andy?
Whoa, explain yourself.
I do remember this.
No, he was protecting
his sister.
He protected his sister by fingering her.
Yeah, he was protecting her.
No. His sister.
How can you protect your sister by fingering her? That's not right.
No, he was doing you, Bailey.
I'm not gonna let anyone do it wrong with you.
Somebody else was trying to steal.
Val Venus was booking her.
John Roberts defending her, was he?
Yeah, that was his actual sister, and he ended up dating her in real life.
Oh, this got dark.
Wait.
Yeah,
I like it.
Bruce Pritchard found her in a gentleman's club. As per somebody wrestling with Bruce Pritchard, another podcast, which we will not mention ever again.
And she was hired in to be a sister, found her in a gentleman's club. Played a kayfabe sister, but then Shamrock was like, I'm just going to...
I kind of like this.
I'm going to give you a wee shoot fight later on.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like...
I'm kind of speechless.
Fucking wrong.
Exactly. Like, you wouldn't go...
I bet you wore that fucking BDSM wrestling.
He wore his ref gear and all like, gear. I'm going to give you a 3 count.
Yeah, I'm going to tap you out tonight.
you can lick my liquor sauce.
Hard.
You can't trust someone who punches himself in the head before they get the ring. Like,
it was him and Blackman. Blackman said fuck all.
But Blackman,
always said fuck
but Blackman
all.
Was one of those psycho cunts that you always kept an eye on. He stood at the back and then you because he didn't say anything. He's like, that cunt's a mental fucker.
He probably went out the back and said I'm smoking, and they were like, Steve doesn't smoke, and he was just out the back shanking homeless people or something just to get it out of his system to come in and be like, I'm calm again. Some dead fucker.
Chuck Norris of wrestling.
And no matter how fucking scary they were, Chris Benoit walks in and he's going, here, mate.
I mean, fucking hell. I know I shank fucking homeless people, but at least don't kill my family.
That fucking PlayStation blimp is just hitting birds.
It's boom. It hasn't gone boom. It's gone off like a balloon that's deflated. Like, around the arena.
In the end, it just redacted the blimp in the end.
Going down. Like
here, the glass breaking for Austin's entrance was pretty cool, wasn't it?
What are they?
What match are we talking about again?
Can I actually just say a point to that? Whenever Austin comes out, how fucking iconic is his music?
Still the best music in wrestling.
It's fucking hell, it's amazing. Like, as soon as you hear it, you just go, oh, someone's gonna get their balls rolled.
That's it.
I don't care if Stone Cold, if he's just out to do a VT segment. I'm going to roll someone's balls.
I used to have it as my ringtone, but anytime the glass broke, it scared the shit out of me, so I had to change it.
He's just a...
Even if you didn't look as hard as Stone Cold Steve, you feel like a hard bastard walking down to that.
Yeah, like. I mean, he's just a fucking badass cunt. Like, he really is. I mean, I didn't appreciate him when he first came to the WWF, but he really was, and especially in this era with the Austin 316 just started up a few months before. I mean, it was emblematic for me of a changing of the guard and the style 100%. And attitude of wrestling. I mean, this is where it changed.
Now at this point he is liked by the crowd, yes,
but he's technically,
but he's still
a heel.
Yeah, he is.
Well, and yeah, he's semi, but the problem is that they kind of, the crowd were still,
are they torn?
They were still all over for Brett.
The worst year if they were allowed to cheer for Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Because this was sort of pre-attitude era, just coming into it.
But it was also, I think, a change of the audience's mentalities, because a lot of people, ourselves included, were people who were kids in the Hulk Hogan era, and we're now sort of in their early teens.
Yeah.
And you're looking at someone like Stone Cold Steve Austin going, he's fucking cool.
And then
Bret Hart, who you loved as a kid, because you're
squeaky clean.
Yeah, now you're like, Kyle's a boring guy.
He is a boring fight. He's the John Cena.
At least John Cena has a bit of a laugh about himself.
If he's getting glass out of fucking fireworks.
The first thing about that is actually comes out of a purple tunnel that looks vaguely
like an asshole.
Yeah,
a giant octagon asshole. He comes walking through, and then Shamrock's like, "Where's the octagon assholes?"
A well fucking punctured asshole.
Shamrock comes out. Did I just stand here?
But it's amazing you how times have changed, because like how simple that stage setup is for WrestleMania 13,
very much so,
compared to the over the top shite we get today.
Just a point though, because I remember mentioning about Stone Cold coming out, and it just the music and the way he came out, he was such a fucking badass. And then whenever Brett comes out, his entrance music seems really dated and tired.
Yeah.
His entire package.
Yeah.
I think that was indicative of that mid-90s lull.
Take your vitamins, kids.
Take your vitamins. Nudge.
But it's a theme that's still used to today with Natalya. Like, is it ever just going
to
die?
And fuck, she is. She just needs to fucking, you know what, Natalya? You're a
Oh Jesus, man!
She's bored as shit. Like,
holy fuck, dude!
No, actually,
here, that's Ronda Rousey's best mate. She'll knock you out.
Fucking Ronda, I'd fucking chop her.
Moving on. Fuck me.
Yeah, so I actually think that basically Bret Hart just seemed really tired and dated at this point. And this for me was the most striking point about the two different styles. And I think that's where maybe the crowd, as you rightfully said, they were becoming teenagers now.
Yeah.
And they were more aware of like, comedy was a lot edgier then.
I got like Channel 4 back in the 90s, when 1997
mental. Fucking right it was. I didn't think they'd get away with half the stuff now.
Channel 4 is so pale in comparison though.
I think I'd maybe stop watching wrestling because I discovered Eurotrash during this period of time. I was like, what's the point?
Suddenly everything makes a lot of sense to you.
your fucking skin tight referee gear.
Can make that tighter and get Lulu Ferrari out and get her to wear one while we're at it.
Lulu Ferrari would be fucking brilliant on WWE.
Vince would have been all like,
Vince would have loved him. He would have been amazing.
He loved him. Ferrari was the girl with the massive boobs, you fucking madman.
I was thinking of, who was the other guy? The guy on your press.
He's thinking Antoine Ducot.
I was thinking of.
Oh,
sorry.
Jesus, Andy, that's a big stretch, mate. Oh, come on, get your fucking creepy, fucking perverted. No, that's
French TV.
French TV sorted, man.
Anyway,
so
Chris, did you even know what we're talking about?
What, that show Eurotrash?
Yeah.
Yeah, but not a lot. I remember when I missed it when it was on Channel 4. It was on Bravo.
Oh Jesus, when was that?
I don't know.
Like 2 a.m.
I haven't watched the repeats clearly.
Mom, can I stop and do my homework?
Oh fucking hell.
This is going down a very dark place. Let's move away.
Yeah, it's gonna get darker, I'm telling you. So straight away, as the bell rings, the wrestlers basically just go at it with a grounded pound.
Yeah, no, I love Austin just sort of piles on Brett, sort of beating the crap out of him.
Fucking absolutely starts laying into him. And to me, I think that this is just, it's thematically, it just shows you that this is the end of that fucking awful mid-90s wrestler gimmick.
This was
fuck your fucking about, let's just get straight into it. I'm gonna kick your fucking,
it was cool because it was like the beginning of the brawling, like as we're seeing it now, they're just punching the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is we have Physic Man makes points throughout the match, because he's still on commentary at this point.
Yeah.
Of saying, oh, this is not what you usually get on WWF television.
It almost kind of set up their eventual feud. Spoiler that they had, because it almost, like, from the outset, Vince openly sort of didn't agree with the way Stone Cold operated as a wrestler.
Yeah, but interestingly, Jim Ross, who was kind of a heel color commentator at this point,
yeah,
did. Like, he was really building up. And so, and it was interesting watching it with Jerry the King Lawler really putting over Stone Cold Steve Austin, which obviously he doesn't do this time of year.
No,
no, no. But, you know, after they're really, I mean, they go at it like a million miles an hour from the start of the match. It's like, it doesn't let up.
But do you think the reason why it doesn't start in the conventional way, I know you're saying it's a new era of how wrestling is becoming, but do you think there's a big difference here in the sense that because Ken Shamrock's there, they're thinking, think UFC, UFC is out and out, digs,
well,
punches,
think,
submissions, and hence why it's...
I think everything here is thematic. I think it, they've really thought about this before they went out, because of the fact that Ken Shamrock's there. This is a change of, like, a more nasty side of wrestling. People are starting to watch combat sports.
Mm-hmm.
You probably find at this time it wasn't quite the ratings winner, WWF.
No, I think they were, they're having their asses handed to them by WCW at this point.
And they're trying to make an edgier product, and this is before the proper attitude era comes in.
I actually think this was actually one of the lowest turnouts for a WrestleMania.
Yeah,
I think this was the 18,000. Yeah.
Which was it, many?
18,000.
Is that all?
Yeah.
It's fucking tiny crowd, like.
In Chicago, too. That is
Wild. Like, you know, Raw's a year later ended up being bigger than some of those than that WrestleMania.
But that obviously stayed at WWF then.
That's it. But again, that is, like me at the time, I was very disillusioned by WWF.
I wasn't watching at this point.
No, I just turned off after this.
Because at the time, I just wasn't feeling it, because they still had a lot of the gimmicky wrestlers.
Yeah, I dumped it for me long before that, because I saw the, I think you were at it too, Andy, in 1992, I think it was, was in the King's Hall.
No, I was there in 1994, so it was actually roughly, late 94, early 95, I just started to drift away from it gradually.
Well, maybe it wasn't. It was either, I think I saw Taker and Sid fight each other, which I think was the 92 one.
I saw Diesel and Macho Man.
Well, that was definitely 94. Yeah. So in 92, and I saw it in the flesh, and I was like, shit, this is not what I thought it was. You know, I had no context of it being a show. I thought it was real. So I just took all my figures, fucked them down. This was the moment I just put, I turned to my father. My father looked at me and went, I can't.
It's the moment the magic died.
And he's like, I can't believe I paid this and wasn't wanting to bring my kids here. And me and my brother just looked at each other and went, we went home and we fucking gave away all our action figures.
That's so sad.
The posters came down. And prior to this, I'd already cut my fucking Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty poster in half because it split up. My heart was broken about that. And honest to God, we got rid of everything.
It's still over a bit.
I stopped. No, it still hurts. But I give up on everything. And it was only after and when the Attitude Era started that I got back into it. So this is definitely a section of wrestling that I was not exposed to.
Yeah.
Had I had still been watching it,
you might have been interested.
Yes, somebody may have shown me this. I'd have went, they've got rid of the cheese. And it looks so much more realistic. Storylines are far better. We're not getting fucking, I don't know, give me some shitty examples. Brutus the Barber, Beefcake, kicking
Dick, about. Dick the Dumpster.
Yes.
Brucey was,
you know,
just
being did me wrong, like, they're still
Bastion,
like,
Max Moon.
Max Moon.
There still
Bastion
was,
Booger, all that.
Yeah.
There's fucking
there
off,
still
you know?
Was a little bit of a gimmicky sort of ness to it. You know, it was
Savio Vega was still kicking about.
Yeah,
that
Savio
up, really.
Vega was still kicking about. Oh, for fuck's sake.
See, I didn't even see any of those guys because I didn't even start watching wrestling until the Attitude Era started.
That's mental.
Yeah.
But
that was my second innings on it.
But this was, you could sense that there was a change here,
yeah.
And it was starting to turn, and that was the most interesting thing. Going back and watching it, you start to realise that, and
yeah.
You didn't notice it as a kid so much. You knew that there was something different,
sure,
but you sort of, you didn't, it was kind of hard, it was jarring against what you knew before.
Before this match, I don't really remember blood being as
no,
prominent
I don't remember.
In a WWF match.
No, I never remembered it. Being a thing, maybe apart from like a cut lip or something.
Yeah.
We'll see, even when we get to the blood in this, I don't even think it was a blade job. Because if you
we'll talk about it when we get there.
We'll continue on about this. After they really go at it, seriously in the ring, they end up tumbling out of the ring, and they really continue
some really great stuff.
They fucking, it's some serious nastiness outside the ring.
It's like, 2 minutes in, like
Stone Cold smashes the ring post immediately. Bret Hart fucking attempts to suplex Stone Cold over the classic metal barrier into the crowd, but he's impeded at Austin by Austin at each attempt. Before reversal, sees Hart dumped on the rail on his dick.
I love when he gets the clotheslined over the rail.
Yeah,
after
into
that.
The crowd.
He's like, imagine watching that for the first time with no, like, obviously modern context. We've seen all that kind of stuff today in 2019.
I don't think then it was a big,
no,
common thing.
That was it, and maybe that's why it was so exciting. And you could hear the crowd were mental for it. It was amazing.
I mean, obviously, it happened the odd time. Yeah. You know, we've touched on it before in other matches around that era. And
it's
before.
The same when we spoke about Steamboat and Macho. Yeah, Man. There's a lot of spots crowd. In that. You're like, whoa, this must have been a big thing at the time.
But this is Steamboat Macho Man turned up to 11.
Yeah. Turned to 11.
I think that the most telling thing about it is, they go into the crowd, and it'll happen sort of before with some wrestlers. But they don't just go into the crowd. It's the fucking chaos that ensues, and it's the nastiness behind it all. It's really fucking brutal from the outset.
And it seems so unrehearsed as well. Like, you know, when you watch that sort of stuff in the crowd today,
you can see guards pushing. They're already positioned in that area. Yeah.
But these two just didn't give a fuck.
I just love how Captain Lou Albano and Tony Atlas are sitting front row as well.
Yeah, he falls through the veterans pretty much.
But even watching the crowd while they're up in the stands,
it's incredible.
Mental.
Yeah, they're just so fucking
crazy.
They're trying to grab the camera.
Yeah, they're not used to this at all.
I mean, and the whole time, whenever they go up into the crowd, and Austin just continues the assault and prep.
I love when he just grabs.
Shamrock only just stands by and watches in a skin tight ref gear.
To be honest, he's not the only guy. Just doesn't really pay attention. There's a point where they get into the crowd and everybody's freaking out, and I watched it going, you know what's really nice about this? People are in the moment, they're looking at it, there's no mobile phones.
No.
The most you'll see is a click camera, which I think's glorious.
That's something I really miss about a modern WrestleMania is compared to, there's one particular one I always say is amazing, pre-mobile phone. It's when Austin hits the stunner on Michaels a year later, and you just see the entire wall
of
camera flashes as
beautiful.
That happens.
It's amazing.
You don't see, obviously you do not see that in the modern day because of camera phones, and it's so sad.
Yeah,
because it was one of the most magical moments about a WrestleMania or any WWE moment that was so like the holy shit moments.
You know the funny thing is, you just imagine everyone with the greasy hands, like sweaty hands, just ready
don't
to
drop
take,
that camera,
ready to take a picture, and as soon as he hits that kick into the gut, and they just fucking all go for it.
But as I said, camera's full.
I mean, full. It was a click camera. You just had to wind it.
What do you call them things you used to put in them though? The films. The films.
Oh my god!
What age are you?
29.
You should know this shit.
Holy fuck,
dude! I just can't remember words sometimes.
Shoehorns and
fucking. If you read that fucking book, that has words in it, you dildo.
No, they're not in the
dictionary. That one too. But back to my original point, I was saying that while Ken Shamrock is just fucking milling about standing doing nothing, I thought it was fantastic. If you look at the background of the crowd, while everybody's freaking out, there's one guy just sitting and he's trying to like protect his hot dog. He doesn't care. He's like,
well, there's a reason why.
He's like, fuck this.
But there's a reason why. Because
my hot dog.
Whenever they end up with that sort of barrier part up in the crowd, Austin takes a beer from one of the beer sellers, takes a fucking drink of it, and then fucking he literally locks it right in. He fucks it into Brett's face.
I'm
just like, fucking hell! And this is not normal for the time.
How much were beers back then?
And imagine, I'd probably put Brett over the edge. He's like, you got beer in me!
Oh, my fucking hair is gonna be sticky! He would have fucking hit
that. But after that, he lumps it at Brett's head and just fucking kicks the complete ball bag off him. Like,
or something really old school about like pure old school territory era professional wrestling about it.
Yeah,
and you tell because obviously those two were kind of brought up in that kind of mindset.
Yeah,
which is why it works so
well. And I think the crowd fed on that as well, because you see they are all over the wrestlers, and it's just, I mean, they work their way further up the arena, and it's just fucking absolute it's fucking brutality.
I love the fact there's no, as Andy says, there's no security, there's no,
no.
Nobody's getting between them. And
there's no rehearsed. Well, it clearly wasn't clear to Vince beforehand that they were going to go
and pick I mean, who else would be allowed to fucking try and attempt a powerbomb on the steps with the crowd around him and there's no security?
Apparently, I was reading Austin talking about this particular match, and they didn't tell Vince about the blood previously.
Okay.
And
right.
Brett kind of said to Austin, go for it, and if Vince loses shit over it, I'll say it was my idea. He can't do anything.
Because he had more leeway here with Vince than Stone Cold.
Of course, later that November.
Brett was probably like, I had no idea he was going to do that. Vince, he's an outrage to this company. How much money am I getting?
Degenerate. Now pay me.
It's probably the one time that Brett was nice to someone.
Probably. Stone Cold was like, this is clearly a fucking setup from this guy.
Yeah, but it was funny because when they're up in the crowd on the steps, Austin actually attempts a powerbomb, but Brett actually ends up reversing it in the back body drop, and you see, you can't quite see it, but you can see enough to see that fucking,
it's the crowd's
Stone
reaction
Cold
makes you go, fuck, what happened
he's
there?
He landed badly on his spine on those steps.
Yeah, and this was pre neck break. as well, so yeah, he was more up for taking these sort of bumps.
Yeah, and let's be honest, those fucking arena steps are probably concrete.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even hurt sliding down the stairs in your house.
Did you do that all
fucking fast? This is why I love you. It's like, you know, nobody else has really been there, you know, those wooden steps or concrete steps. Chris, like, you ever fallen down your own fucking steps?
Yeah, it hurts enough.
Bring
it
home. I'm going to be slid down.
Slid down?
It's like a dog scooting its arse across the floor.
But he's got worms. You cleaning your arse down the stairs.
Joe, do we need this duvet anymore? No. Right, I'm making a sleigh.
It's your average fucking Saturday afternoon.
Joe broke the table again.
I have to say that the whole time I was watching this, it was just so frantic.
The frantic nature of it all, I think it reaches a point for me, but then it plateaus where Brett stands on the railings and delivers one of the most shitty, feeble sort of drop.
That's backyard wrestling stuff right there.
It's just it killed momentum for me. You know, it's like we're back. Stone Cold's been leading this barrage of modern brutality, and then Brett goes, I'm taking it home to where I belong.
I love the overcompensated Kevin Dunn in the back just brought another double feature of the clothesline over the railing again.
Yeah.
So, okay, even Kevin's like, that was a bit shit.
Here's that
clothesline from Austin again.
I know, from like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I did write though in my notes that there was a good bit of miscommunication between them, because see, even when they were fighting outside, Brett was waiting for a punch and Austin wasn't swinging it because Austin was waiting for the punch. Then it looks as almost Austin doesn't know if he's going to drop an elbow drop or if he wants them to stand up at this bit, because you can see Austin land on the ground as if to say,
what the fuck,
will you hurry up? And then later on in the match there's a neck breaker that we'll see
back in the ring,
they weren't expecting it. So I think, but before it happens, Austin is obviously talking about the spot. Just seems that they were going extremely frantic and couldn't keep up with what they were wanting to.
That was
off.
Actually my next point, was the neck breaker when they got back in the ring, and that was a brilliant neck breaker. It was just well performed.
A really good old school move, though.
Yeah,
like,
really, I love the neck
really
breaker.
Good professional wrestling.
Well, I can bring it back to even way before any of that. If you watch from the very, very beginning, when they start exchanging blows, you know, as Stone Cold like rugby tackles them to the ground, there's a point where they actually are swinging digs, and Stone Cold is hesitant. He holds back. He doesn't know whether to punch, and Brett doesn't know what to do. So even from the outset, because everything is just straight out the gates, I think they're both unsure of exchanging the blows. They know the spots, but they don't know who's hitting who and at what point. You can see it extremely early on. So it's not just whatever point in the match we're in now. It happens way, way before as well.
Yeah. Basically, Brett gets tossed really brutally into the ring steps, and he really clatters it. And then Austin gives Brett the fingers.
He gives him, but what
before doing a flying knee off the apron type of thing, elbow.
An elbow. It's the exact same move that Brett did,
but
except with a double middle finger, with more aggression, more speed. And it's like, Brett, that's how you do that.
It's like, Brett, this is why this guy's gonna be
exactly.
The next big.
But at this time, you never saw this in WWE.
No, you never saw the finger.
You never saw someone flipping the fingers,
flipping the birds.
And this was just like, this is the change.
This match was like probably, this whole pay-per-view was probably you really ever.
Oh,
except for if this match hadn't have happened.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's just the part where Austin drops the steel steps, but it just looks really painful the way he drops them, because it's as if he goes to, he doesn't release too much, and his back fucking completely bends back.
Yeah.
He gets deck chair and he folds.
Yeah,
he just completely
folds like a cheap suit.
It's like he forgot to let go. He's like, oh fuck!
Lifts the steps and he's like, what move are we in here? And he's like, by that time Brett's kicked him and he falls like a sack of shite.
Yeah, that was a great whole segment there. I mean, the fingers bit was just, I was like, he's amazing. He's just a fucking badass. And this is a proper change in style of wrestling. And then I think as a result of that, you see Brett
turns
change.
It up to
I know, he just snapped.
He just, yeah,
and
he just snapped.
And then the double turn slowly starts to happen between the two of them. Yeah.
And it's like almost that Brett's going, oh fuck, I need to up my game here because this is something.
It's one of the few times in wrestling I've seen it look as though he's actually properly digging him in the face.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Brett's I don't know if he's consciously going, fuck, I need to up my game. I think he's reacting and going, you give me the fucking fingers, I'll fucking give you some of this back, you fucking prick. And he starts getting, so I don't think he's constantly going, oh, he's looking hot, I need to fucking get hotter in this match.
Yeah.
I think he's genuinely going, this guy's pissed at my fucking Weetabix. And he's going to fucking turn it up a bit.
It is fantastic section that. And I was going to mention that, right, sort of to get back into the ring, Brett does the great neck breaker in Austin, as I mentioned.
Yeah, so that's so quick.
Yeah, so quick the way he does it. And a really well done neck breaker is such an such a beautiful move, and it's rarely done these days, but it looks devastating.
Yeah, but the except like the Velveteen Dream, you don't see anything like that anymore.
Those old school moves, some of them are great. Like, a backbreaker, a neck breaker.
A good DDT. I like a good DDT.
There's a lot to be said for a good DDT.
I think Austin was expecting a DDT here, because there's a bit of a
another miscommunication?
Not so much a
John Cena, the prototype over here.
Bastards. Austin takes a wee minute before he spins with Brett, if you know what I mean. So I think Austin was expecting to be dropped down to DDT, but once Brett starts to pivot his body, that's a good word, Austin
pivot?
Then Austin finally goes with it, and that's why it looks so devastating, because it was like a wee snap.
Because it was fucking painful. To be fair, Austin, I was going to say, sells it well, but he actually probably genuinely is hurt.
I'd say that's probably where his neck thing maybe might have started. Before Owen came, was like, I'll finish off with Brett story.
I have to say though, we'll see after this. Brett does some really fucking off. Like, Brett looked pretty good up to this point, and then he does a terribly performed work on the knee of Austin to soften him up for a sharpshooter. He does this thing to his knee, and it's just like, what are you doing, mate? Like, you literally just flop back with his knee, and there was no torque in that knee. Like,
he drags over his body,
and it's like, it's kind of, you're just tumbling over him.
You know what it reminded me of? Do you know when your missus says, do me a favour and change the sheets in the bed, and you're doing the duvet, and you're just falling over with a fucking duvet? That's Bret Hart with a duvet, and you're trying to find the corners. That's fucking Stone Cold's fucking ankle. That's me trying to fucking make the bed.
Bret the duvet maker Hart.
People at home, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Duvets are cunts. Bret Hart's a cunt.
He just falls. He just falls over like a sack of shit, and it doesn't have any sort of devastating effect. Now, Austin tries to sell it after that, but it was just
wouldn't take much.
You know, I actually think Brett looked at it and went,
What am I doing with my life?
Why did I do that? And he does actually make more effective use.
A little bit more beautiful, but we'll get to that.
But I think as well, it's quite clever ring work from Brett, other than the shitty work.
Clever ring work, but shitty work.
Apart from the initial work on the knee,
it kind of builds.
Because it's what I sort of got the sense of, that it was actually settling down a bit.
Into a more submission match
after the initial like expulsion of Fury, because you need something to contrast the Fury with.
But I mean, at this point we're nearly halfway through the match, and Raz actually been wanting the submission move.
No, like, you know, Brett just takes his knee apart bit by bit and works him down, because he knows that to get Stone Cold to settle, even to fold him up into a sharpshooter, he's going to have to make him basically fucking legless.
Make him immobile.
But then I love that as soon as he gets up, Austin hits a stunner out of nowhere. He's just like, will you fucking wise up, Brett?
Leave my leg alone.
Leave me alone, you bastard.
Actually, that was my next point. Because ironically, Stone Cold actually gets up and ends up reversing the flow of the match. And he ends up performing his stunner on Brett. But I think it's
like that so quick as
but
well.
But I think it's telling as well that this is the early days of 316 Steve Austin, because his stunner isn't as devastating.
It doesn't have the pop that has a year later.
Yeah. And it doesn't sell quite as well either.
No, I don't think wrestlers were selling it as well. We would have the over the top stuff that The Rock would do when he takes a stunner.
So the stunner probably genuinely was just a bit of a, like, as it says, a stunner. Stunned the competitor. It didn't actually knock him out.
Half of the impact comes from the crowd's reaction, so the crowd don't really know what to make of it at that point either.
Coming up next in the match, you can see Brett's nasty streaks coming out now.
This was interesting.
The minute the turnbuckle.
Yeah, and I never really noticed a nasty streak in Brett before.
But you keep seeing Shamrock going, no, mate.
There's
mate,
no need.
Mate.
He basically does like a figure four leg lock on Austin around the ring post, and then he puts sheer.
But look how the crowd going bonkers for it.
Yeah, the sheer torque he puts in that by leaning backwards off the ring post.
Glorious looking.
It
though.
Is fantastic.
And Velveteen did it, didn't he? Did he did a wee throwback to it there?
He did.
I had Takeover last in
November. I love you, Andy. Andy knows the fucking facts. The
fact
controller.
Doing it too.
Fuck the Miz, what's he know?
Well, the Miz did the figure four for
no,
a while.
No, but he does it at the corner sometimes as well.
No one cares about the Miz.
But he doesn't inside the ring.
I like him.
No, I think he's done it before. There's some
good hitters. Like
Miz is a time and a place.
Not here.
Not
1987.
Fuck off, Miz.
But anyway.
Not really 2019.
I actually think that was really, really good work on the knee. And it, as you said, it brought out Brett's nasty strength.
You know, just slowly but surely. There you go again. The turn.
Stone Cold bringing the worst of them out.
The infamous double turn, as it's now known as.
Yeah.
It's starting to happen where Bret, even the commentators were kind of built up like going, God, you wouldn't see Bret Hart usually doing that.
Yeah.
That's a bit rough.
And you know, I was watching that going, yeah. I don't remember.
And then he gets the blue bell.
Yeah, he gets the blue bell. That's a cardinal sin.
It is.
I mean, you think that those cunts would actually secure that down. And I mean, it, like, this is whenever Bret really becomes nasty here.
Yeah.
And he brings a ring bell, it brings a chair in. And
he makes Hart Finkel get out of his fucking chair.
I want to hear that's
a real move.
That's a fucking dick.
But what
move.
Chair did he lift though? He lifted a nice wee padded one first.
He lifted, it's like one of the iconic WWF ones with the fucking WrestleMania logos and all.
Yeah.
One of those. He lifts it and he goes, "That's far too nice."
Do you know why?
Finkel's one. Finkel's chair looks like he's got a piss on it. It's a big yellow piss stain on the chair. He's actually pissed in the chair.
He just stopped over and just went,
"Fuck me!" And he just opened up his asshole.
Like, that's exactly. That'll
do. The funny is, I actually reckon that Bret picked up the nice WrestleMania branded chair, and then he looked around to Vince, and Vince just gave him a stir. Went,
like,
"Don't you fucking dare!"
It's like times were tough back then.
Yeah, times are tough. We're only 18,000 people have paid into this.
I'll take that out of your wages.
Yeah, no, that. No, Brad stops going, I'll lose money.
I'm going to lift this piss soaked.
He's like, you're a Finkel! Get your chair, you cunt, you!
Honestly, it's piss soaked or it's a butt crack. Look at you! Honestly, if you want to watch this match for the network and just go, what fucking timestamp are we on? 1:33, go to that. That chair. Finkel's either shit.
Yeah, screenshot that.
Either shit. And or pissed himself at the same time, and Bret's lifted it up and just went, I'm going to put it on fucking Stone Cold's ankle, so he gets septicemia as he snaps his fucking ankle.
It's,
at the
it's
same
almost
time.
Like the double humiliation, because whenever he does bring that
piss stained chair
piss, I'm going to actually go for that. I'm going to say it's a shit piss.
Yeah,
because it's kind of
the
a brownie
shat,
yellow.
No, the fig shat himself.
Oh, yeah, he shat and pissed himself. So I think the shit piss chair, he brings it in into the ring, and then he wraps it around Austin's leg.
Love it.
Before making the climb up the corner. Brilliantly, Austin actually managed to untangle himself because he's like, fuck that, I'm not getting fucking my leg.
And this thing smells
shit,
piss.
This shit piss chair. And then he gets up and he really fucking rattles Bret with
it's
the chair.
It's pretty stinking.
He's like, you take the shit piss chair.
Fuck you.
To the
fuck
face.
You. To the face. I bet you wish you were wearing your stupid glasses now.
It was a proper shit. It was a proper old school.
Shit piss in the eyes.
I'm choking on these wasabi nuts.
Oh dear. Stop eating the wasabi nuts, you fucker.
Honestly, all I can think is Bret Hart with his wee goggles on, just wee window wipers.
Oh, there's
wee bit of sweet corn to sit there.
Oh,
Jesus.
Oh,
I love
no
him,
need.
My vivid mind. Oh,
I have to say, though, that I mean, he really, really rattles Bret with a chair, and I mean proper.
Oh, yeah.
Proper cunt smashes.
And that's when the crowd just pop like fuck.
Yeah,
you mean like Bret's fucking
yeah.
I think at this point that the crowd's kind of going,
oh, they're going mental for like,
they're going mental, but not just that. I think they're kind of going, it's like, because they're attacking their hero,
yeah,
their traditional hero, and they're going, do you want
fuck him.
Yeah. But this is why I love Stone Cold Steve Austin so much. When he does shit like that, you just see him taunting them like fuck, when
yeah,
they're shaking the head back and forth,
he's smiling all,
yeah,
always like.
Like, you are a vicious
There's
bastard,
so much
mate.
Attitude oh. coming from his chair shots to Bret Hart. The,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they're not just a Hulk Hogan fucking doink on the back. He is really bashing through that poor bastard.
Do you know,
like,
do you know what's funny? Is it follows up this. It's Austin, basically, he does his first proper in-ring submission on Hart, and he puts Torque on the shoulder
good.
And neck, and then he follows it up with the Boston Crab. And then Bret Hart is just the whole time resolutely saying no. Like, he's at the
yeah.
saying no. And the time I was watching this, all I could think is,
ask him!
Jericho! I could think of, like, imagine Ken Shamrock is going, ask him!
Ask him!
I was actually Stone Cold shouting, ask him, you know, in the vein of Jericho.
Do you know, I wrote that down, because see when it shows Bret's daughter covering her eyes?
Yeah,
it
that
made
was
me
amazing.
Think, what would Tilly do?
Tilly
be,
Tilly be
in the front row, fucking passing beers, or by going, ask him! Ask him! It's like, fucking, she's a ruthless wee shit.
Your daughter is you personifying.
Oh,
so it would be exactly how you would react.
Swear to God.
I will admit, though, it is so weird for me seeing Stone Cold doing a submission. I just thought it's a strange.
Yeah.
I'm just
yeah.
used to him kicking the absolute pish out of people. Like.
Yeah, I mean, he does. I mean, it's up on the screen now. I mean, he does that. It's actually a really weird submission. It's
That's
almost like
mean.
An MMA style one.
I think the way it's weird for us, though, is because we kind of got back into it when Stone Cold was at his height, and that was post, again, that was post the the neck break, and his style did drastically change.
But, you know, he follows it up, that weird sort of shoulder and neck kind of submission hold.
India Boston
Crab.
Ask him!
And he keeps shouting, you know, ask him! Ask him!
Oh, fuck.
And Brett the whole time just saying, no. And then he actually managed to inch to the bottom rope to force a break.
But while we're at that, if it's no disqualification, how the fuck does the rope break count? I don't get it.
But it's a submission.
Don't question.
But it is
wrestling.
A submission match, though. But so if it's a submission match, it's not an I Quit match. So
yeah.
If it's a submission match, really.
But
breaks.
The rope breaks count in no disqualification matches.
He has a point because he's already used a chair as part of it, so that would be a no DQ type.
So don't break the rope break because no DQ. Hold a minute. He can't get disqualified.
Maybe
it
was one of Vince's famous stipulations.
Fucking. I just think it's stupid.
Oh my god.
I just hate seeing
well,
rope
then.
Breaks being broke when it's like, oh, there's no disqualifications, anything goes.
This is...
you can't hold the rope. And or he can't hold the move for 5 seconds while he's holding the rope.
Aye, but there's loads of that shit here.
This is where the magic is ruined and Chris just not only leaves the podcast but leaves that whole
lifts the veil
just walks into the ocean and
just never returns.
He becomes a complete nihilist.
But it's one of my pet fucking hates in wrestling when it's like there's no disqualification, you can hit him with a chair.
It was like Omega v Jericho.
You have to break the fucking rope break. Yeah, but anyway,
no, you're right. There's been other elements where it's been like it's a submission match, so you have to submit and then you get beat in the submission and things like that. It's like, it doesn't make sense.
If I wanted to make you tap out and you're holding the bottom rope, I'd be like, fuck you, I'd pull harder. Touch your rope, you wee bastard. Touch your rope, you wee bastard.
Pull harder. How much is this lift costing me?
Oh Jesus.
Fuck's sake. Thank you for not driving over there. Oh,
walking home today.
With a fucking limp.
It's actually funny. After
can I get
a
lift on
I'm just looking at some action.
Actually, after he forces the rope break, Stone Cold then teases the crowd. Initially, he sort of did a bit of a reversal of fortune before he ends up being tossed out of the ring by Austin. And then Stone Cold just stands in the ring and absorbs the crowd's booze. It's almost like a cheer mixed with a jeer. So you can hear some of the fans of Bret Hart.
Yeah.
But he just soaks it up. He's like such a bastard about it.
He's like, ah, you fucking cunts.
Yeah.
But in the same sense, you see a big fucking pink neon sign saying Bret Who. So it's clearly the crowd are behind
him. And right behind the Bret Who is an Austin 316.
But then it sort of
this is one of my favourite moments in the whole match.
Yes,
going up.
This is where it gets
Jim Ross.
Really, really nasty.
It's brutal.
Basically, they go to do a whip and then it's almost a reversal and Austin gets thrown into the announcer's table.
And do you see Jim Ross just get planted on his fucking back?
My notes here just had fat bastard falling up.
Oh, sorry, I thought that was Jim Ross.
No, you're right.
Sorry.
It was the
Spanish guy, was it?
No, I think it was the ring announcer.
He's a timekeeper.
He literally just gets fucking wrecked, you know.
But we can see them clearly. They go through the cameraman as well. As you see with the shot, that guy's fucked also. And Austin's head hits that railing with such impact.
I fucking loved how Austin just kept his face pressed up in between the bars. It just fucking sold it.
Austin just had the bouldering look of Vince McMahon's looking behind him going
fuck,
hey pal,
sick.
You gotta get up.
But just you're saying his face right against the railings. Imagine being the kid on the opposite side of the railings and Stone Cold's like looking through, here's Johnny.
Coming down his face.
Because he gets busted.
This is where he gets busted.
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
I don't know. The camera goes away for quite a bit and he comes back and it's really, really badly cut.
It must have been a blade job then.
I think it's a blade job.
This is maybe where reason why they didn't want to tell Vince up front.
But did it right in front of him.
Yeah, because
doesn't look like Jerry the King.
I just love how Jerry shouts, I got blood on me, McMahon.
If this was substantiated by, you know, the talk of the work beforehand for blood, it makes me think that there was a blade planted.
Yeah.
And they knew where they were going to go for it. And I think it definitely was. I mean, this was the first show of blood by Austin that I recall.
It's a beautiful crimson
and it's,
mask.
It was so good they made a t-shirt out of it.
Yeah, it was fucking brutal looking. And I definitely think that when he was landing in that area, there was a bit of blading. And I really thought that it added to the gravity and the gritty brutality of the match. Like, it just went, fuck, this is serious.
And it was
like
the watershed moment for WWF.
Yeah, it really was.
Point,
this was the turning point. And then to me, this was also, again, I mentioned about the changing of the guard. I was like, Brett's in his fucking, he's in the shit here.
Yeah.
Like, as a character, he will not suit the style.
But it also cements that whole UFC mentality that's coming with this, with Ken Shamrock there. Everything about this is, it's a UFC fight in a fucking wrestling ring for me.
But what's interesting, I think, for Brett's point of view is, I think he finally, he's realizing the change. He's quite smart in that he's realizing the change of the guard here, and that's why he goes full heel.
Yeah, he responds to
come.
Yeah. He definitely responds.
He got able of his anti-America.
Yeah, he actually responds really, really well to it, I think, in the middle of the match. But it's funny because after that, like, it's really iconic. Stone Cold crawls back into the ring.
Man, the blood's pissing.
The blood is pissing everywhere, and the camera angles are fantastic. And I was just like, fuck, this is brutal.
So we're coming into the final act of the match.
It's just when he's lying on the mat, and we've all seen
the mat's
people
covered.
Bleed. We've seen crimson masks that are like jelly fucking face masks that don't move. He's just sitting there, and it's just dripping, dripping, dripping out of his fucking temple. And there's at no point where you can't look at that and go, that's it.
And
like,
funny, like, Brett sees this, and he works on the cut head with punches. Like,
boots him to the head.
And boots him. And then he delivers a backbreaker and then an elbow drop. He's just fucking working him. I think at this point, it almost looked, when he was working on the cut head, Brett was working on the cut head, like, with punches, I thought, he's lost it.
But this is it. This is where the wee kids in the crowd are still idolized. Brett going,
oh my god.
What were you doing?
I mean, it's a good
what is my hero doing?
They slowly take the pink glasses off and just throw them to the ground.
They probably just set them down and go,
I want to go home. There's a wonderful bit where Brett's he's straddling Stone Cold and he's punching the shit out of his head, and he stops and looks at his hands covered in blood. It's very subtle, but he looks down and he sort of sees the blood in his hands, and it's kind of, it's one of two ways.
It's like, what have I done?
Yeah, it's what have I done. You either you go down the road to the left, or you're like, I've gone too far, or you go to the right where it's like,
I'm going all in here.
Reclench and keep going.
It's
and
almost,
he clenches the fist.
It's almost like, poetic.
It is great.
You know, like fucking Robert Frost's poem, you know, about the road.
You look at me like, I know who the fuck Robert Frost is.
Is that from a book?
Is that from a book?
Poems tend to be in books.
I thought they were
road
on.
Where he takes like the road less travelled, and you're sort of thinking, what route does he go down here? Does he go down the route that has never really gone down before?
Or the sharp router.
The sharp router? The Luther route?
It's got the Luther route or the sharp router? What's it going to be, Brett?
At this point, you sort of go on, fuck, this is a definite change in style for WWF. And I don't know if they had approached Vince beforehand and mentioned this, it would be no. It would have been said no. No way.
But afterwards, Vince is going, well, I'm glad
the
that was my
through the fucking
roof. Or no, I'm glad that was my idea.
But he delivers the elbow drop on Austin.
He's just working his head constantly.
Working the head
constantly.
But then he brings the chair in again, and he uses it to work Stone Cold's knee repeatedly. So he is softening him up for the submission here. Like, he's slamming the chair into the knee. He's being quite nasty about it because he's in the place.
Like?
Yeah. And it does look quite stiff, mm-hmm. when he's hitting him. And it's almost like this is Brett turning.
Austin sells it so well.
Yeah, he does. He sells it brilliantly.
Not that I ever thought I'd say it, but Bret Hart is pretty much spit roasting him. He's hitting them from both ends. Like, he really is.
But
and then they were coming into
to a sharp
to the final, the finale, isn't it?
Well, he's trying to lock him up. Is that a figure four? Actually, trying to lock him up into.
Yeah. He's trying to roll him for the sharpshooter.
Yeah,
but Austin hits him in
he just pulls his hair.
He just pulls
his hair to get out of it.
I thought he raked his eyes.
I thought he pulled his hair out.
Let's be honest. I want him to pull his hair.
In my head. As he was reaching for the hair, he accidentally pushed his thumb into his eye, but then continued to pull the hair. It was the most devastating move.
It was the biggest cunt move in professional
wrestling. Trying it out to be a potential finisher.
Yeah.
They were like, that's too rough. That is far too rough.
Get that shit banned. Bleed all you want, but don't be doing that.
God damn it, pal.
You guys really get the sense that Austin is in desperation mode here, because he's bleeding out all over the fucking ring, and the ring mat is a mess.
Yeah.
Like, it is covered in blood, and like, it's pools of blood everywhere. And Brett gets his hair pulled. Brett the bitch.
Go back to my early notes. Brett is a bitch. Was one of the first up in the notes.
He hits him really stiffly, like really nastily, looking like it. It's not like the Brett Hart that we knew.
And then Austin just fucks him in the nuts.
Fuck you, you cunt.
Yeah.
I know, there's just one stiff hit too far. He goes, fuck you.
Yeah, here's your receipt.
Brett goes down in a beautiful fashion.
Oh, it's so
Austin is selling
it's
the
punches. Love it.
Yeah, Austin's selling the punches prior to this very well, and then it's just like, that's fantastic. And then Brett sells that kick to the dick, and
but
you're just like,
that's
yes,
how you
man.
React when you get hit in the balls. It's like time stops. And everything's moving
yeah,
so
you
fast.
See it
goes,
it's like one of those moments. It's like one of those moments where you get hit in the balls, and you're just like, just give me a minute.
It's like when you get hit with a button, you know, the football, and
just give me a minute.
Your fucking your kidneys are right up your
fucking
throat.
As you feel your balls is up in your stomach.
But it, what happens next?
Oh,
scared the shit out of me.
Is this the sound of this alone?
Oh,
if you're thinking what I'm thinking of,
this.
Basically, this gets really fucking stiff between the two of them.
Just like
is
my dick right now.
Yeah, my dick is hard as fuck. As hard as stone cold.
Oh.
Basically, Brett is picked up and he's tossed, fucking, like, whipped so heavily into the turnbuckle, sternum first.
Yeah.
And I mean, the fucking ring shifts.
Yep.
It's that
so
brutal.
He's already out of breath from his balls, and now it's Jesse. He's like, give me 2 minutes.
Austin's like, I'll knock them back down there for you, buddy.
And then, fucking, it's absolutely nasty.
I'll knock your balls back down your chest.
The sun.
So he just.
He sees them hanging out his throat. He's like, I have an idea.
Oh, sorry, pal.
When I saw that, I was like, fuck me, you nasty bastard. And I went, right, this is it. It's like, basically Brett's going, oh, you're getting nasty with me at the start of the match. I'll be a nasty fucker and I'll turn. And then Austin's like,
oh really?
Stomp a mud
hole.
You
think I'm nasty?
No, he goes to Ken, hold my beer.
And then he does. He actually, after he throws him, he stomps a mud hole
he
in the fucker.
He stomps a mud hole in the
cunt. And then he gives him the fingers.
It's the fingers again, but it's the whole
thing. That's why I love Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Awesome, man. And that's where the crowd are absolutely...
Foaming
at the tip.
Even today, I was watching that, just going, come on, fucking yes, come on, man, come on,
Andy, for the people at home, Andy lives in a beautiful spot that has massive windows, and I would love to see someone across the road where you're just freaking out at the TV and pointing at the screen.
That's how much I love Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's, he just had that in him.
But it's funny, because this is the point where Austin just becomes ultra nasty, you know, like he gets a fucking electrical cord.
It's class.
That's so good.
It's so good,
and
man.
Brett's on the ring apron, essentially. And he's sort of like hanging
for
off.
Hangs him over
the
ropes.
He's hanging
him
over the ropes.
Strangles him.
And he's fucked. Like, Brett looks absolutely fucked at this stage.
It goes to some dark places.
Does go very dark.
I love it.
It already went dark. The only way it was going to get darker is if, like, you know, Austin was giving him the fingers. Is that he legitimately gave him the finger? Bomb. That was
show
the way
on,
I was going.
Show
it's
me
like,
on the
it
on the red hot teddy bear where he touched
you. He turns around to the kids that idolize him. He's like, "You ever see your hero do this before?"
My Uncle Billy does the joke.
But he drapes him off like, oh, the camera will work as well, by the way. Just sort of pans in towards Austin's head, and it's a fucking mess.
He looks like a fucking beetroot.
He does.
He's a big beetroot.
He's
like.
Fucked like. But he still manages to send Brett sort of hanging
off
the apron. And then he just gets ultra fucking nasty and grabs an electrical cord and he wraps it around Brett's neck and just being a nasty bastard choking him. And then, to be fair, Brett does it quite well. But then, of course, he grabs the ring bell.
Which I think is fantastic because that ring bell is brought in very early on, left in a single spot.
They obviously decided this beforehand.
Yeah.
You reckon? Predetermined?
Yep. Predetermined.
No, but I think that it's very good because you saw him bring it in, and the fact that he didn't use it at no point during the match
that
I
know. Yeah.
But he just
he never thought about it again.
No, I was like, "Where's that bell? Fucking lift it up and deck him with it."
Yeah.
And now that you see it, you're just like, "Oh my god, this is fucking great storytelling."
Yeah. Fucking smashes.
Fucking brutal.
Smashes Austin's face with the
douche. Personally, I would have hit him in the metal bit of the bell, but that's just me.
But it kind of plays again on that, like he's working the head area where the cut is. So you know, he's just fucking
at this stage of the match, look at the ring with all the positive blood just fucked.
And
like,
it's not even that it's dried. There's legitimately wet pools of blood everywhere.
I love it.
We're coming towards the finale of the match, and this is fucking incredible for every aspect of it.
This is iconic.
Yeah, Austin is placed into a sharpshooter, and he looks like he's gonna tap out at one point because he really sells it so fucking well. And the blood is all over the ring mat.
Just
it's
slowly dripping
off his fucking head.
And the fact
you can even see
Shamrock.
It come out of the wound.
Yeah, and I remember was it Ken Shamrock? The one time he actually does something, he just says, "Say the word, Steve," and Steve just goes, "Ah!"
Usually it's the other way around. It's like
he just says the word, Steve. He just goes,
"Ah!" I like that.
But he said,
I love Shamrock's actually pointing at him, like he's yelling at him, like, fucking quit, you wee bitch!
Yeah.
Fucking quit!
But then the camera work here is just iconic. Yeah. This is one of the most iconic
and the
WrestleMania
ripping,
moments.
Blood's dripping down his teeth.
Yeah.
I love that. It's
and he brings his head up, and the blood is everywhere, and he's screaming, and you're going, that is fucking, that is
iconic.
This is why I love wrestling.
Yeah.
See, even that part where he screams, obviously he's pushing, and you can then just see the two big fucking lines coming out of the cut, just like fucking dripping down.
And he's not tapping out. He refuses. He's in serious pain, and he refuses to tap out. And it's just fucking brutal. Like, to me, this was just selling.
Even the way he sells passing out, it's
yeah.
not like most wrestlers where they're just like, they're down and that's him out. It's
yeah.
like,
actually, whenever he sort of like, it looks a bit woozy, like he's about to pass out, he slaps his hand down. He thought, fuck, is he going to tap out?
And then
out?
He just raises himself up.
Yeah, raises himself up.
It's like Curry on his last pint of the night.
Yeah, I can make it.
He's got a second win.
You better fucking
and then
drink it.
Just like, in the bar.
Chris, drink this for me or I'll follow you. Okay, Chris goes to drink it. Fucking get off my pint, you bastard.
I'm the Bret Hart, but that cost me money, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Give me that back.
He's got a second wind and he gets back up again. But arguably you could say it actually puts more torque on the sharpshooter. You know, he's fucking screaming,
it's
and
great.
The camera pans out, the blood down his teeth and everything, and you're going, this guy is a fucking hard bastard. 10 out of 10 would not go for pints with.
I definitely would.
No, I would not.
I definitely would.
He'd be the sort of cunt that would smash his own head with a pint.
It's just a man's
head. Austin drinks wine when he's at home.
He does actually.
Apparently.
He likes a big glass of wine.
Yeah.
Mm. But it's just the finale, it builds and it builds, and the crowd are on their feet and they don't know what the fuck's going to happen. Like, is he going to tap out? He's covered in blood.
It's because he almost gets out of it at one point. You're thinking, another go of that and he's well out of it.
Yeah.
He's sweet.
But to be fair, Brett just holds it in fucking
place. Like, you fucking bastard.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that's it. And basically, Stone Cold passes out.
That's it.
Stone Cold dead.
Yeah.
He's just...
Stone Cold.
Yeah, he's just Stone Cold. He legitimately passed out. He didn't tap out. He passed out.
But you're not... I remember when I first saw it, I wasn't disappointed. And in a lot of instances where people pass out, you're like, fuck's sake.
What
I want this
out.
To go...
Well, what
it
got
out. That's a cheap end and I want it to go further.
This was the best
ending.
This
is great.
Yep.
This is fucking great.
It showed Austin to be a hard
job.
Bastard.
Yeah, I actually thought that
no
this...
No screw jobs, no nothing. It was
no screw jobs. It was just a fucking solidly good, brutal match that was a change in style for wrestling at the time. And you know what? I actually thought that at the end, because Austin passed out, right, it kept Bret look... It made him look strong,
big,
in
big,
a sense.
Big time.
Because it kept him as top star. He won the match.
100%.
He basically fucking caused this badass just to pass out. But I actually thought that it only served to make Austin look even better for the future.
Oh god,
yeah
I know.
Because
definitely.
It made Brett look strong, but it made Austin look better for the future prospect, because you went, this guy is someone to seriously watch, because this fucker, he didn't even fucking tap out for the sharpshooter. You had to make him pass out, and he was covered
in
blood.
It's a rare talent to look stronger in defeat than it is in winning.
The only thing I will say, though, that very early on, and we spoke about saying how Stone Cold didn't have submission moves, and they were going to say, oh, you would have to knock your opponent out, blah, blah, blah. There's actually, JR says earlier, when, I can't remember, I think it was Stone Cold hits Brett or something with the steel steps or something, and he actually says, be careful you don't knock him out, because you can't submit if you're knocked out. You'll never win the match that way. Here we are.
Yeah.
Stone Cold's on fucking conscious, can't submit, and Brett still wins.
Ah.
Chris, explain.
Well,
I know how you love when wrestling has a loophole.
But it's also a referee's decision. He just stops
the
match.
That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
But
referee,
I just thought I'd pick up on that.
Referee stoppage as well.
Yeah, but I actually think, ironically enough, at the end of this match, Ken Shamrock, he's like pretending to care about a bleeding out Austin.
I know.
Just fucking get the medics in, you cunt.
I know, he's all like, media, alright.
Stop standing around
like
fucking greased up Beetlejuice and get him in.
He's just poking him.
We bleed
out.
We bleed all the time. Get up, you wee bitch. Fucking predetermined shit.
Poking him with a stick. Oh, you'll be alright.
But do you know what? I actually think that what was really telling about this was that, Brett looked strong, and then he almost kind of ruined it.
Yes, by being a wee dick.
Yeah, because
throwing a hissy fit.
Yeah, you know, actually, it didn't seem like it was so much a heel turn as like a bit of
a bitch turn,
a bitch fit he was having.
Bitch fit.
And he basically,
he was a stroppy cunt.
He really was. He continued the assault on Austin's leg before Ken Shamrock.
Like, as if he wasn't already cementing himself to be enough of a bastard. He was like, I'm going to turn it up a notch.
Yeah.
Called for, uncalled for.
Yeah. Well. To be honest,
I think it was just they needed to get that spot in where Shamrock was to do something.
Yeah.
Like, but technically, even at that, unconscious. He can't even fucking feel him kicking around.
Yeah, because I'm surprised. Like, Shamrock. Really, Shamrock was a non-talking point in this the whole match.
Yeah. Yeah. But this, I think, as well, served to accelerate this idea that WWF was becoming an edgy product, because they basically had Ken Shamrock, an MMA fighter, who fucking just tossed Bret Hart around.
He was one
the
of the top dudes,
like a sack of spuds.
Yeah, just went fuck off away.
And
here.
The fact it wasn't even I'm not saying it's not a well executed move. Like we see belly to backs executed and you land.
It was perfectly flat.
It was like to protect you.
UFC style.
It's a UFC style. It's like you don't know
it's
how
a
you're
shoot,
landing.
Damn it!
And he just fucking throws him like a snotter against the wall. It's great.
And do you know what? I actually thought all of a sudden Bret looked very, very weak, and then immediately. Yeah, the crowd are sort of cheering on
Shamrock.
Shamrock's up for it. He's like, come on.
And then
on,
the crowd are cheering on Bret as well. They're going, fucking, let's go for it. And Bret just walks out of the ring.
Pussy.
Yeah.
It says me, like, pussy.
Bret the bitch man Hart. Like, he really is. Like, he just fucks off out of the ring.
That's
and
a t-shirt.
That's it. If this was, if Twitter was around back then, just be us just tweeting that until we
hashtag bitch man.
But as you say, having the bitch fit, and he walks out into the crowd, and some people are cheering like to get back in the ring, but there's one guy in particular who's, you know, giving him fucking abuse, and Bret Hart blatantly fuck you and flips the guy the bird like
with a lovely pink light
one step
on.
Away from spitting in the guy's face.
Yeah,
like you can't miss it. Fuck you.
This is not
finger.
The Bret that we knew from before, and it was a heel turn, but he
like
Bret has
spatting people before and swore,
he just
like,
looks
what?
So weak.
And of course in the months to come he looks even weaker because he goes and gets his mates or his family.
I can't be back here on the mates.
I'll get my dad on you. He's like, no, I'm alright, thanks.
Can my dad knock your pan?
My bro is a fucking bulldog, mate.
Oh, fuck. I just forgot, after the match ends, did you see the way the referee took the fucking stunner?
Yeah.
He went down to his arse instead of his knees. It near fucking killed him.
Yeah.
I missed that.
I said, basically, Austin, whenever it sort of goes back into the ring again, the camera
Austin
back right
himself up like,
yeah, Austin sort of gets up and then he just fucking the referee's trying to help him.
Ooh,
up,
I know, it's
and he just stunners him and
paralyzes him the waist down like,
and to be fair,
I think it's great for the whole Stone Cold character where it's like,
fair,
I don't fucking need you.
He was
still hard as fuck.
That was a shitty move. That was a dick move by Austin, but ironically in contrast to
he gets a big pop
fucking
massive
and the crowd are loving him as he's like, yes.
So Bret Hart wins the match, then fucks up and looks like a bitch. Austin loses the match, attacks a referee and looks strong as fuck.
It's amazing.
Wrestling,
and
ladies and gentlemen, wrestling.
And you know what the funny thing is, as Austin fucking leaves the arena, the camera just pans to all the blood all over the canvas, and my note here at the end was hard cunt.
I think on that note, I think it's a great way to wind this episode down.
But even prior to that, you hear the crowd shouting, "You suck at Austin,"
yeah,
and it slowly changes into a chant of just Austin and 3-6. So you can hear the crowd slowly. It spreads like between the people there that they are supporting him, but straight to Vince as well. You can see that Vince is not proud of the blood, and he iterates again.
Yeah,
this is not something on our regular television program. Blah, 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 blah,
and,
blah,
until he gets backstage and he sees the
you're making me millions.
He sees the ratings and he's like, fucking hell. He sees the reaction in the weeks to come and he goes, fuck, we're selling more tickets.
I think
you know?
Is one of like the Meltzer matches to get a 5-star rating as well.
Yeah, this above, not only just for the content of the match, but for the how important this match was as a turning point. And we've said that before in this podcast, I mean this episode, this is a proper change. This is a sea change in style and attitude and approach to wrestling. And it actually took them arguably to go behind Vince's back to do it. And then Vince saw how popular it was and he went, well, there's money being made here.
Very much so.
Let's run with it. And this was the start of the Attitude Era.
Tell me this, Chris. Is this in your wonderful book that we've used on occasion?
Yeah, it is mentioned, but I didn't write anything down from it, but I know it was definitely...
Because he doesn't read the book.
This book's filled with pictures.
Does it deserve to be in the book?
Oh, I would say so. I loved it.
100%,
yeah.
This is definitely one of the best matches you could watch of all time.
Like, I wrote here that I really enjoyed the match. It wasn't filled with high spots that you would get nowadays, but it was filled with great stories. It was like a fight. Which is why
I think that's
it.
It was something really old school, like Texas Deathmatchy, not the same way.
Don't get me fucking started.
Not the same way as a future episode we'll come to later. But it was a proper like when you see old videos of the really brutal territory, like late 70s, early 80s matches.
Even if you go back to Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair's
feuds. Although those eras of the early 80s and stuff like that, just NWA at its height. It kind of is a throwback to those.
It kind of brought the brutality of those like sort of local indie promotions from back in those days to the sort of corporate TV, you know, sponsored like fucking wrestling promotion, like the big worldwide one. And all of a sudden it was just, but it was done on a level that just was nasty, like nastier than the old ones, I think.
I agree.
It was flipping the bird at fucking people in the crowd. The kids are watching this.
And it's also like it's credit to the production team to get in the right angles.
Some of the Kevin Dunn did his job right and didn't get his teeth in the way.
I know, and I think he wasn't cutting to a wee kid in the audience whenever Austin was in the in the sharpshooter.
I think that this was just for the how historically important this match was in terms of its knock on effect for everything else, not just for WWF but for the entire wrestling industry, because this laid the groundwork. You know, WCW were killing WWF at the time, and they probably sat up and went, oh fuck, this is different. This is, oh god, we've lost this talent to WWF and he's changed.
I think it's a moment when, you know, WWF especially stop insulting their audience.
Yeah.
Before they inevitably go back to like 20 years later.
Now this is around, what did we say, 97?
It's
97. So this is around where we had the likes of ECW Hardcore Heaven. And you know, pay-per-views like that. And as I said, when I started out watching wrestling around this era, it was a bit later, but I had started working through the back catalogue of like ECW. Blood was never a new thing there.
No.
And I also was exposed to very, very early UFC videos that were
but most of the states in America at that point.
Shoot fighting and mixed martial arts and things like that were not as mainstream,
they were licensed by the regulatory authorities that they are now.
That's correct. And there was, and there were elements of gimmicky type things in UFC very early on because it hadn't found its proper feet. So I do feel this whole concoction of what you see before you hear
was
ECW. Is like what are the fans on the ground
lamping
up, bubbling? What's happening in the underground, and what's going to change in the mainstream? And I think
which is why they brought UFC, Ken Shamrock in as well.
Exactly, ECW put them together, and who's the dick in the middle? Bret Hart.
But
interestingly, that's it for me.
Interestingly, though, a few months later, WWF Vince McMahon himself recognizes ECW's contribution to the pop culture phenomenon of wrestling, and there is actually, people forget that there's the ECW invasion way before Vince ever bought them.
Yes.
So the ECW wrestlers are turned up on Raw and at pay-per-views for a couple of months.
They're sitting in the front row at one point, isn't there?
Sabu or is that RVD or Tommy Dreamer match on Raw later this year as well.
Yeah.
So even Vince himself was clearly got a wee bit of the finger on the pulse seeing the change.
Because this was already at the point, wouldn't it have been, that WWF had a bit of a coin in on ECW, do you think, with Paulie at that point? Were they already
were using Too Cool Scorpio, but in return they had to pay the $1,000 a week that ECW was getting for his music.
Right.
So whenever Vince wanted to bring Tokyo Scorpio to WWF, ECW couldn't afford to lose that $1,000 a week that they were getting, almost like kind of an endorsement deal.
Okay.
Too Cool. So Vince agreed to pay ECW that $1,000 a week.
So that's how that all panned out.
That's how the relationship started.
I love shit like that.
Investment actually from WWF's part at the time. But you're right. I think, you know, Vince probably paying lip service to the sponsors and the people at home going, this isn't normal for this, but he probably had his finger in the pulse.
I think deep down, though, I don't think he really, really wanted to go that way.
No.
But then he has to react, though, because WCW was an edgier product at even this stage. Like NWO were the cooler brand.
And I mean, you didn't really have anything to respond to that
in the current nature of
I don't think they were technically really about this stage yet. I think they were later this summer.
Oh no, they're not after.
There's Savio Vegas in it.
I stopped watching it.
Actually watched a bit of it because it was leading to Doom.
Ahmed
Johnson.
Did you see? I forgot Ahmed Johnson looks like such a big Titus O'Neil red.
He's a mad bastard.
But here, Ahmed Johnson was a great wrestler back in the day.
He was a nutball.
He was a nutjob, like, but he was when he first broke onto the scene, he was a great wrestler.
Explain to me why his fucking elbow pads are up his arms and his knee pads are over his ankles. Do me one. Oh no, they're over his fucking calf muscles.
That's another episode. That's another episode
his
for another.
Quads thing. And all sorts. He looks like Rob Liefeld fucking drew him. That's how bad he is.
Even though he was throwing some allegations at WWF for his lack of a push.
Yeah,
really?
That was racially driven.
Well, yeah. Well, he was the first African American to win an Intercontinental title.
Yeah,
to win any title, I think.
No,
for Farouk
was
the first African American
yeah.
to win a heavyweight championship.
Yeah, but he was the first to win the Intercontinental belt.
He's still a fucking dickhead.
Yeah, but there you are. You're a fucking
dickhead. And on an episode where we talked about Stone Cold Steve Austin and Bret Hart, we conclude that Old Man Johnson
is a dickhead.
He's a dickhead.
Chris, what are we off for?
And I know that we have given Bret Hart a bit of a hard time, but I actually met him before.
Well, fuck, look,
here we go.
The Mr. Fucking Name Drop here.
Let's say you haven't met.
I was 11 and he was really dead on. He came. Did any?
Oh, that's
him.
Oh, did he come to
Aces? We're all wrong then.
No, did you ever go to the WWA show? The
I was there.
Yeah,
I was at that
Bret
show.
Was
really
was,
weird.
He was the commissioner and he was meeting people on the top floor.
Gerald K. Lawler was fucking commenting.
Right. Yeah. Whoa. Run this by me. Again.
Right. There was a corporation called WWA. I think it was World.
A corporation. It was like
World
an All Stars thing.
World Wrestling All Stars.
Yeah, I don't think it was a. Promotion is, I think it was almost like a touring circus.
Circus being a key word here.
Yeah.
But they came to Belfast on 27th of November in 2001, and on that night I met Bret Hart, Gangrel, and Brian Christopher.
That's right.
So there you go.
But yeah, no, good. That was a really weird show, though. Just before we wrap up, because the commentating was actually broadcast to the whole audience.
Yes, on
now, that would be weird.
It was really weird.
Oh, that sounds
like
some five-star would do.
It was like a week.
But to be fair, they probably had an audience at WWE. Didn't have an audience at five-star.
It was literally about a week before Volver went back to WWF, immediately after the invasion angle.
Just a wee bit of trivia, you cunts.
It was trivial.
What trivia? You didn't ask us any questions.
I give up.
Anyway.
On that note.
Yes. On that note, I think that'll end the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, because I certainly fucking haven't.
You cunt.
No, not being in the same room as you.
Oh, fuck you then.
You can find us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Vampire Freaks.
I give up.
Yeah.
I give up.
Just roll with it.
Hey,
fucking
own it.
All the best.
You know why I'm sad? Because nobody is following us on Vampire Freaks.
Well, you can, if you're on Vampire Freaks,
get off.
But say if you want to stay on, you can find us at all those good,
you're going to say all those good social platforms.
Yeah, I was going to say all those good social media platforms. You can find us on three of those social media platforms that are good and one that isn't.
We're not even sure the other three are that good.
No, they're not even that good. But you can find us at The Four Suite is our handle, and then our website address is foursuitehorseman.co.uk.
After so many episodes, I finally remembered the
yes.
fucking URL that I purchased.
Yep, you can go there.
Yeah.
You can find all links to our episodes there as well.
If you're really lucky, Kareem will slide into your DMs.
I will.
Oh.
Slide in dry.
Slide in
dry. No, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, we're Anchor FM.
All good podcasts.
Yeah, it's fucking great. We're
yeah.
we're in all of them. Maybe twice because I fucked something up, but we'll figure that out.
That's par for the course, of course. So anyway, on that note, I've been Richard.
I've been Andrew.
I've been Curry.
I'm Chris.
And we've been the Four Sweet Horsemen.
Changed first recording, you're not allowed to drink, and now you're going to be eating fucking peanuts.
Look, I didn't start with this. That's why I brought my Kiplings, you fucking ungrateful cunt.
Crunch, crunch.
You brought
crunch.
More Kiplings?
Not today, because he's fucking giving me
fucking
shit.
Fucking arse. No, we ate them last time.
Of course, he's fucking ate them.
We just didn't think they were a cake.
I thought Kiplings was like a done deal now that
I was just going to feed you.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
I was hoping that we get an endorsement deal out of Kipling's after this.
Right, well, we can only get some water.
We're eating the cheap Mr. Kipling, because one day we'll hope to get the big multi-pack of Mr. Kipling's. So if Mr. Kipling's right. is this name, your wife's hot as fuck.